Christ did all the work. He did all the wrestling. He is the one that wrestled with Satan. He is the one that defeated Satan on the cross, so that through his death that we can come to the end of ourselves, call on his name, and be saved and have that personal relationship with him.
Are you looking for meaning or a word from God that's relevant to your life? Are you searching for a better understanding of who God is? Well, you're in the right place. You found the Gary Talks About God podcast. This is a weekly podcast that comes to you from the pulpit of Red Bank Missionary Baptist Church in Germantown, North Carolina. The podcast is hosted by Red Bank Senior Pastor Gary Sanders. Now let's get ready to take that walk through God's Word with our pastor, teacher, and friend. Hey, he's that guy we call Gary.
I do want to thank the choir this morning. I enjoyed the special. Did a very good job. Thank you for that. I may or may not have shared this before, but when I was a kid, I loved NWA wrestling. Fair warning, I cannot say wrestling. It will be wrestling probably the rest of the match or rest of the morning or match, whatever. But I loved it as a kid. I mean, this was the golden age. This was, I don't even know what WWE is. I don't even watch that. But this was the golden age, and I remember it like it was yesterday. I mean, I remember the names. I had the greatest names, right? I mean, there was Ricky the Dragon Steamboat, and there was the Great Kabuki and the Junkyard Dog, and the one that I always tell my kids, and they always look at me and go, "Dad, you're making that up." And I'm like, "No, it really was his name. Jimmy the Boogie Woogie Man Valiant." I remember that name. And when I was in eighth grade, I had the opportunity. I mean, it was just awesome. I got to go to Starrcade in Greensboro. Now, Starrcade was the big event, wrestling event of the year. For those of you who, WrestleMania, this was before WrestleMania. This was Starrcade. And I had ringside seats. I mean, I was right there. Sweat was flying on me during the, it was awesome. He's like, "Oh, this is great." I was an 8-year-old guy. I mean, there was nothing better. I was having a great time. And the main event that year was Ric Flair versus Dusty Rhodes. I mean, it was the pinnacle. I mean, you couldn't have scripted the matches any better, right? It was awesome. I had a wonderful time, and I remember that. You know, you have memories that you remember from a kid, and I remember that one. The lights, the match, the smells, the sounds, just everything. It was great. But when you went to those big events, and even today, you always have the smaller events that lead up to the main event, right? I mean, the main card, if you will, or the final build match or whatever it is called, was the final build match. It was billed for weeks leading up to it. It was going to be Ric Flair versus Dusty Rhodes for the NWA World Heavyweight Championship. And that's what it was. There was maybe some twists and turns to get to the final match, but the final match was the final match. It was who you went to see. Now, I bring all this up because in just a moment, we're going to read in Genesis chapter 32, and it's going to take us to a wrestling match. And the way Genesis 31 ended and the way Genesis 32 begins, it looks like the wrestling match is going to be between two brothers, Jacob and Esau. However, as we read through this, there's going to be a surprise entrant into the wrestling match, and it's not going to be Jacob and Esau. It's going to be Jacob and someone else. And it's that someone else that Jacob wrestles with this morning that's going to be very applicable to us and where we are, and really to society as a whole. Because it's a very practical segment. It's a very practical portion of Scripture, even though it centers around a very unorthodox situation, namely Jacob in a wrestling match. Let's read what God's Word has to say, beginning in verse 1 of chapter 32. Jacob went on his way, and the angels of God met him. And when Jacob saw them, he said, "This is God's camp." So he called that place Mahananim. And Jacob sent messengers before him to Esau his brother in the land of Seir, the country of Edom, instructing them, "Thus you shall say to my lord Esau, thus says your servant Jacob, I have sojourned with Laban and stayed until now. I have oxen, donkeys, flocks, male servants, and female servants. I have sent to tell my lord in order that I may find favor in your sight. And the messengers returned to Jacob, saying, we came to your brother Esau, and he is coming to meet you. And there are 400 men with him. Then Jacob was greatly afraid and distressed. He divided the people who were with him and the flocks and herds and camels into two camps, thinking, if Esau comes to one camp and attacks it, then the camp that is left will escape. And Jacob said, O God of my father Abraham and God of my father Isaac, O Lord who said to me, return to your country and to your kindred, that I may do you good. I am not worthy of the least of all these deeds of steadfast love and all the faithfulness that you have shown to your servant. For with only my staff I crossed this Jordan, and now I have become two camps. Please deliver me from the hand of my brother, from the hand of Esau, for I fear him, that he may come and attack me, the mothers with the children. But you said, I will surely do you good and make your offspring as the sand of the sea, which cannot be numbered for multitude. So he stayed there that night, and from what he had with him, he took a present for his brother Esau, 200 female goats and 20 male goats, 200 ewes and 20 rams, 30 milking camels and their calves, 40 cows and 10 bulls, 20 female donkeys and 10 male donkeys. Then he handed over to his servants every drove by itself and said to his servants, pass on ahead of me and put a space between drove and drove. He instructed the first, when Esau my brother meets you and asks you, to whom do you belong? Where are you going? And whose are these ahead of you? Then you shall say, they belong to your servant Jacob. They are a present sent to my lord Esau, and moreover, he is behind us. He likewise instructed the second and third and all who followed the droves, you shall say the same thing to Esau when you find him. And you shall say, moreover, your servant Jacob is behind us. For he thought, I may appease him with the present that goes ahead of me, and afterward I shall see his face. Perhaps he will accept me. So the present passed on before him, and he himself stayed that night in the camp. Verse 22. That same night he arose and took his two wives and his two female servants and his 11 children and crossed the ford of the Jabbok. He took them and sent them across the stream and everything else that he had, and Jacob was left alone. And a man wrestled with him until the breaking of the day. When the man saw that he did not prevail against Jacob, he touched his hip socket, and Jacob's hip was put out of joint as he wrestled with him. Then he said, let me go, for the day is broken. But Jacob said, I will not let you go unless you bless me. And he said to him, what is your name? And he said, Jacob. Then he said, your name shall no longer be called Jacob, but Israel. For you have striven with God and with men and have prevailed. Then Jacob asked him, please tell me your name. But he said, why is it that you ask me my name? And there he blessed him. So Jacob called the name of the place Peniel, saying, I have seen God face to face, and yet my life has been delivered. Therefore, to this day, the people of Israel do not eat the sinew of the thigh that is on the hip socket, because he touched the socket of Jacob's hip on the sinew of his thigh. So this morning, as we look at this, the main event, we're going to spend most of our time in the end, but we need to kind of set the stage. And as we get to the end, after the stage setting, we're going to see some needs that Jacob have that are very much our needs as well, very much the needs of the world also. So here is Jacob heading toward the land, and he comes to the land, and just kind of as a frame of reference, he's not in the land yet. He's not actually crossed the Jordan. If you look in the back of your map, back of your Bible, you'll see some maps, but just to kind of give you an idea, the Dead Sea is down here, the Sea of Galilee is up here, and the Jordan River flows from north to south from the Sea of Galilee down to the Dead Sea. Well, just about 20 miles or so north of the Dead Sea, there's a little stream that flows into it called the Jabbok. So he is camped out on the north side of it. He hasn't crossed that and gone in. And so what he's doing, remember, he's supposed to go to Bethel. So down here is the Dead Sea. Here's the Jordan River. The Jabbok is right here. Bethel is kind of over here. So he's kind of like northeast of where he needs to go. He's working his way down to Bethel. And so he comes there to the Jabbok River, and there is where he is camped. Now, as he gets there and he sets up camp, he knows that Esau is waiting for him. He knows the big confrontation is going to be between him and Esau. We don't seem to have any indication that there's been any communication between Jacob and Esau for 20 years. So no communication, no talking. But the one thing that Jacob remembers that he has had playing over and over in his mind for 20 years, it's Esau's determination to kill him. Right? Remember, that's why he fled, because Esau said, "The days of mourning for my father are approaching. Then I will kill my brother. He's stolen everything I need. I will take his life. I'm that mad at him." So Jacob knows he's got to go back to the land. God told him to go back to the land, but Esau is waiting for him in the land. So he devises a plan, as it says down at the very end, verse 20, that he may appease Esau. He wants to do everything he can to make this meeting with Esau go smoothly. He's not really focused right now on arriving at Bethel. He's focused on survival. Bethel doesn't matter if he's dead north of the Jabbok. So he comes up with this plan, and there's kind of a series of steps in it, right? Step one, he sends some messengers out to Esau. Just kind of fill him out, right? See what's going on. Maybe come back with a good report. "Hey, your brother is happy to see you." They come back and they say, "Yeah, we met Esau, by the way. He's coming to meet you, and he's bringing 400 of his men with him." Okay? What's going through Jacob's mind? "Oh, great, he's coming to kill me. He's bringing 400 men. This isn't a welcoming party." Jacob is interpreting this as an act of aggression, of bringing his people to fight him in war. So Jacob goes, "All right, I need to come up with something else." Step two of the plan then, he says, "All right, I'm going to divide everything I have into two camps. All right, I'm going to put some of the people over here and some of the people over here. So if he attacks the one on the left, the one on the right escapes, because, hey, 50%. Is better than 0% of 100. So that's what he does. So if he does this, I have half of what I brought into the land. But then he thinks, well, maybe that's not enough. So step three of his plan is he comes and he divides his animals and his servants with them into droves. Now, a drove is just the number of animals that can be driven, okay? It would vary depending on how many people you had driving the drove, all right? So he divides them, and look at what he does. He's got a drove of goats and a drove of sheep and a drove of camels and a drove of cows and a drove of donkeys, five droves. And he tells them, "This is what I want you to do. Go, and as you drive it, and when you come to Esau, say, 'These are presents, these are gifts, and Jacob is behind me.' And put enough space between the drove of the goats and the drove of the sheep that he can't see the second for the first. So as soon as the first departs, the second arrives on the scene." So it'd be like, "Wow, that's a lot of sheep. Then, whoa, look at all the camels." Kind of to get his mind thinking about all the presents that Jacob is sending him to make him happy, make him feel good. "All right, look at all this stuff I'm getting. I mean, that's a lot of livestock. That's a lot." Notice he gave them more female animals than male. The female animals were much more valuable because they produced milk and more animals. All right? So Jacob is going all out. But then he decides he'll do one more thing. The last thing that he decides and the final step is he's going to send everybody across the Jabbok and he's going to stay by himself. This doesn't look good for Jacob, does it? Right? I mean, what is he doing? If he is sending everything ahead of him and he's coming up last, what is he doing? He's hiding. He's bringing up the rear. Where should Jacob be? He should be in the front leading. But he's bringing up the rear, hoping maybe that he can just sort of sneak by. Right? Just sneak by Esau and everything would be good. That's his plan. His plan's getting ready to change. It's going to change dramatically. Because it says right there that he stayed there that night and he is all alone. He's all alone by himself. And his mind is on Esau and what is happening. There's an external conflict coming his way in the name of his brother and 400 men. And he tries to go to sleep, and sleep eludes him. And as his sleep eludes him, the main event begins. And what Jacob finds out is that he needs to be delivered not from Esau, but from himself. The first need that he has and the first need that we have is we need to be delivered from ourselves. We think that Jacob is getting there because he has this prayer in verse 9. And it's the first time we see Jacob pray, and you can kind of see the internal tension in Jacob, right? He prays, and the first thing he does, he says, "Oh Lord, I'm praying to you. By the way, God, I don't want you to forget that I'm where I am now because you told me to return to the country that I may do you good. I'm here camped out with 400 of Esau's men coming towards me because you told me to be here." All right, so this is swirling, and he says, you know, "I'm not worthy of all this. You know, I'm not worthy of the deeds," and it really translates, I'm the littlest. I'm the smallest. I'm not worthy of all this. You've been faithful to me. You showed your steadfast love, that hesed love, that covenant love. You've showed it to me. You've demonstrated it to me. But, you know, you've got to deliver me from the hand of my brother. There it is in verse 11. You've done all this, but my brother is coming. You have to deliver me because all the promises you made to me don't really matter if I'm dead. Will you deliver me? And we get to the end, and he again quotes God's words back to him. You know, "I will surely do good to you. Make your offspring as the sand on the sea. You told me this." I mean, basically what he's doing as he prays, it seems like he's praying to me out of both sides of his mouth. Because on the one side, he's saying, I appeal to your fidelity. I'm totally dependent on you. At the same time, God, this is all your fault. You've put me in this position. You fix it. Right? I mean, do you kind of get that sense too? He wants it to be fixed, but God's got to fix it because if it wasn't not for God, he wouldn't be here. So that big plan that he had was all his. It wasn't God's plan. It was his plan. So even in the midst of this prayer, "God, I appeal to your fidelity and I appeal to who you are. By the way, God, this is the plan that we're going to go with. This is the plan I'm going to use." Y'all ever done that? I mean, I'm sure all of you are much more godly than me. None of you have ever prayed, "God, I know this is what you said, and I know this is where you want me, and I know this is what you want me to do, but I'm going to do it my way over here." I mean, I know y'all have never prayed that and then walked out and did something else. All right, I know it's just me. I struggle with that. Y'all don't. I understand. So he's praying, trying to escape this confrontation from Esau. And amazingly enough, what happens is the very confrontation that he's trying to escape, he's trying to avoid a battle, he ends up in a battle. He's trying to avoid a fight only to end up in a fight. And it just says that this man comes and he ends up wrestling with him. Right? It says in verse 24, "And he was left alone, and a man wrestled with him." That's all the glimpse that we get. Now, this is not NWA wrestling, okay? This was not scripted. This is neither Olympic wrestling where, you know, there's rules and regulations. This was fight for survival. It was intense, and it lasted all night. And it says, "As the sun began to rise on the new day, the man still had not prevailed against Jacob," which is really interesting because you remember how we were introduced to Jacob when he was born? Said he was a quiet man. You remember that? And so we have this picture, this image of Jacob as being kind of a mama's boy, right? Because he's in trouble because he listened to his mama, which, by the way, you usually should listen to your mama, right? But throughout Jacob's life, we don't see that. I mean, at birth, he's grasping Esau's heel. He gets to the well. He moves the stone by himself. He labors as a shepherd in Laban's flocks for 20 years. He's a strong person. And so this man that he's wrestling with is not prevailing against Jacob. Jacob is holding his own. And we still don't know who he is. And until we find out, as the daybreak comes, all of a sudden, this guy, and I hesitate to say this, but I just, to me, this is what it seems like. The deceiver, Jacob, gets deceived by the man. But just kind of take that loosely. Because the man all of a sudden just reaches down and just takes his hand and places his hand just a touch on Jacob's hip and knocks his hip out of socket. At this point, Jacob realizes, and we realize as we're studying the text, that this is no ordinary man. Which is why as soon as it happens, the very first thing that Jacob says is, I will not let you go until you bless me. I realize you are superior to me. I've not been wrestling with just any person, so I want you to bless me. But who is this person? Well, the prophet Hosea gives us a good idea who it is. In fact, prophet Hosea tells us exactly who it is. Hosea chapter 12, verses 2 through 5. This is Hosea prophesying against Israel and Judah. And he says, the Lord has an indictment against Judah and will punish Jacob according to his ways. He will repay him according to his deeds. In the womb he took his brother by the heel, and in his manhood he strove with God. And he strove with, notice this, the angel and prevailed. He wept and sought his favor. He met God at Bethel, and there God spoke with us, the Lord, the God of hosts. The Lord is his memorial name. Jacob is in a much more serious wrestling match than he would have been with Esau. For he is wrestling with none other than God himself. And Hosea says specifically, the angel, leading us to understand it's the angel of the Lord, or what we would call a pre-incarnate visit of Christ in human form. Christ has come down in man form and is wrestling with him. Which makes us wonder, why did God not just pin him? Why did God not just use whatever wrestling move was available to God at that time and win the match? Well, because the match, it's not about Jacob winning or losing. It's not about Jacob being defeated in the classic sense of one prevailing over the other. Because when you read the story of the wrestling match, what you read is the story of Jacob's life. Jacob's whole life, he has been fighting. His whole life has been a wrestling match. It's been a struggle against his brother. It's been a struggle against his dad. It's been a struggle against his Laban. It's been a struggle against God. Everywhere Jacob turned was a struggle. He was wrestling with everybody. And the struggle was a direct result of his own self-determination and his own self-will. Every position that he was in, he wanted to gain by his own guile and his own cunning. And he kept winning. Or at least it looked like he did. But here in this wrestling match, he comes, and no matter how hard he fought, and his name is deceiver or trickster, do you not think that he tried on more than one occasion to resort to a trick, to cheat, to win the match? If it is a fight for survival, every last one of us here will break any norms of what we think a civilized fight is to make sure that we win. I'm sure Jacob did that too. But no matter how strong he was, no matter how ferociously he fought, he could not prevail. This is the one time where he, through his own strength, through his own wisdom, through his own might, could not defeat the opponent he was fighting. He couldn't win. He could not best God. And he begins to understand that his real enemy and the person he really needs to be delivered from is not his brother, but from himself. The blessings that God has promised him, what God has told him that he will accomplish. It's going to be accomplished in God's plan, in God's time, in God's way, not Jacob's. He must be broken from his own self-determination and his own self-reliance. And so now, every day for the rest of his life, when he walks and walks with a limp, because remember, you know, his plan is if Esau isn't appeased, he can run away. He can't run now, can he? Every step he takes from now on for the rest of his life is going to be a painful and vivid reminder to him that he was his own enemy, that he needed to be delivered from himself. Isn't that the story that we need to hear? Is that not the story that the society and the world needs to hear? That we need to be delivered from ourselves? Everything that we try to do, everything that you hear, and every part, forgive me for saying this, of the American dream is what you can do to accomplish what you want. It's always your will, your idea, your plan. You do this, you do that, and you will succeed, and you will be victorious. And here is Jacob using everything that he knows, and he can't succeed. He can't get ahead. He can't best God. And he finds out that the only time that he is going to fully enjoy God's favor and understand God's blessing is when he has been brought to the end of himself. That's the same thing for us. The only time that we are going to really enjoy and understand God's will is when we have been brought to the end of ourselves. To stop striving in our own self-determination. And that deliverance, that understanding, that deliverance from ourselves has a purpose. If God wanted to defeat Jacob, he would have defeated. If the purpose was just to defeat and crush him as a victor over an enemy, God could have done that, but he didn't. It had a purpose. And it has a purpose in our lives too. And that purpose is to help us understand that we need a personal relationship with God. Because as Jacob is fighting, he's not letting go. He's still struggling. He still wants the blessing, to which at this point, you should ask yourselves, when Jacob says, I want a blessing, you should ask yourself, what blessing? Because Jacob has already been given a blessing, has he not? God said, I'm going to give you the land. I'm going to give you offspring like sand on the seashore. Through your offsprings, all the families of the earth will be blessed. What more could he want? Well, namely, he wants to live. What he really wants, the blessing I think he's after, is he wants to live. Remember his prayer, deliver me from my brother. If I'm not delivered, the promises become void, and who cares? But here's the question. Has Jacob not already been delivered? And you go, well, no, he's not met Esau. You're not going back far enough. Jacob has already been delivered. Jacob has already been blessed. Even before he meets Esau, he was delivered from Esau before he was born when God came and said, there's two nations in your womb, and the older shall serve the younger. Jacob's already been delivered. He is struggling for something that God has already given him. I mean, don't you find that just mind-boggling? Fighting for something that he already has. God's already given him the blessing. But he still says, I want to be blessed. Just hang on to that. We'll come back to it in a minute. And it says, I want to be blessed. And the man speaks again. And he asks to us what is such an innocent question, but is far from it. He says, what is your name? Now, when you get asked that, you know, hey, my name is Julie. You know, what's your name? My name is Gary. What's your name? My name is Cheryl. We just, you know, to us, it's nothing. But in Hebrew thought, your name conveyed who you were. That's why every time when you look in your Bible, if they have a name, it usually has like a little subscript, you know, A or 1 that tells you off to the side what the name means. Your name was who you were. What is your name? And you can't just gloss over this. He looks at the man and he says, Jacob. But what is he doing in that moment when he says, Jacob? What's he doing? He's confessing who he is. He is looking at him and saying, I'm deceiver. I'm the supplanter. I'm the one who for all my life has struggled against everyone, including you. And in that moment, when the man, when Christ asked him, what is your name? And he says, I am Jacob. With that confession, he is brought to the end of himself. And strangely enough, he is agreeing with his brother Esau, who says, is his name not rightly called Jacob? In that moment, I mean, can you imagine how terrified he must have been to have to make that confession? How terrified would you be to look at God and say, I'm the one who continues to struggle in my own might. I'm the one who continues to fight against you. That's my name. I'm the one who, with one hand, prays for you to do something, but with the other hand, takes it back and puts it squarely in my realm of abilities. Would you want to stand before God and say, that is my name? Jacob has to confess to the character that he is. And for us to come to the end of ourselves, it would help us if we would confess who we are as well. Yet Jacob continues to cling. He wants this blessing. And from the Hosea passage, we get and understand that he doesn't demand the blessing. This isn't, I demand, you know, he's not stomping his feet going, I demand you bless me. It says in Hosea that he is asking this blessing, and he is doing it through tears. Because he's lost. He's come to the end of himself. He's confessed his name. He's not prevailed, for the one time his cunning and guile does not work. And he says, I am Jacob. The blessing comes in a unique place because the man says, your name will no longer be called Jacob, but will be called Israel. The name Israel means God will rule. So think about this now. Up until this point, Jacob's life has been ruled by Jacob. Everything that happens has been determined by Jacob. Jacob has said, my entire life, I will rule my own life. Jacob rules, and now the angel God says to him, your name shall no longer be Jacob, your name shall now be Israel. So now he's got to walk with the limp, but now every time he uses his name or somebody calls his name, it is a testimony to the fact that God will rule every single time. It is not Jacob who rules. It's not Gary who rules. It is not you who rules. It is not the world, the powers, and the principalities that rule. It is God who rules. And Jacob's greatest blessing then, even though God is going to bless him with wealth, and he's going to bless him with family and his descendants, and even given his name, his greatest blessing is the fact that through this match now, the relationship with God has been restored. He's God's now. And his name testifies to that. God will rule. Think about the Israelites who are hearing this story. They've been the nation of Israel their whole life as they're waiting to cross over into the promised land. And they're sitting on the banks of the Jordan looking into Canaan and all the people in there. And they go in there with a name knowing that God will rule. that God's going to rule, that God is going to establish and keep his covenant that he made with Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, and their descendants. And if you remember that covenant that he made, the covenant was born so that he would be their God and God would be his people. And so there they sit waiting, understanding that the covenant is built on this relationship that they have because they are God's people and he is their God. Jacob is going to walk the rest of his life as Israel, knowing that God is his God and he belongs to him. Jacob survives the match. And he comes to the end, and he says he's going to name the place Peniel, saying, "I've seen the face of God and I have been delivered." It's very interesting as you read the passages, and it's not clear in our English, but verses 20 through 21, where he's talking about seeing Esau and he is behind him. Where you see the word him, it's really the word face. Jacob is preparing to see the face of Esau. And what he ends up seeing is the face of God. And realizing in that moment and seeing that he no longer rules, God rules, and he's seeing God's face. He's going to call this place Peniel, where I have survived. And he now walks in a relationship with God. So that when you get down and he runs out and he meets Esau, it's no longer about whether or not Esau's going to kill him. God rules. God is in control. It's now God's plan, not Jacob's. He's been brought to the end of himself, and he realizes that he needs that relationship with God and that his life is only fulfilled in that relationship. And that truth still applies. For God still rules. And he is still faithful to the covenant that he made with us through the cross of Jesus Christ. And we must come to the end of ourselves and confess who we are, that we are a sinner in need of saving grace. Because in that confession, there's a realization that we can't do it. We cannot, through our own cunning, our own guile, our own struggle, our own wrestling, we cannot attain that relationship with God that we want. It is only when we realize that Jesus Christ strove for it for us on the cross. Christ did all the work. He did all the wrestling. He is the one that wrestled with Satan. He is the one that defeated Satan on the cross, so that through his death that we can come to the end of ourselves, call on his name, and be saved and have that personal relationship with him. That's what this story of the wrestling match is. It's a story of God in his covenant faithfulness, telling Jacob, "I'm all that you need." It's the story of God telling us today in his covenant faithfulness that he is all that we need. And if we'll come to the end of ourselves, we will understand that. But until we operate in our own power, we don't hear the message. Jacob couldn't hear the message for 20-some years because it was all about Jacob. But when he came to the end of himself, he realized, it is God who is going to be the one who brings me into a relationship with him and gives me the blessings and the promises that he has made. You know, we got that craft bazaar coming up soon, right? A lot of people will be shopping for Christmas. So we approach Christmas. I guarantee you that all of you here will either receive or give one of those ubiquitous gift cards. Walmart, Target, Starbucks, somewhere. And don't get me wrong, I'll gladly receive any gift card that you want. All right? I'm not saying that. But did you know that there is an estimated 4 billion, that's a B, 4 billion. Billion dollars in unused gift cards in America today. That is money where someone has gone, gives you the gift card with the benefits already purchased, and someone's not using it. It's really kind of a shame for somebody to give you all those benefits and not use it, isn't it? Isn't it a greater shame to know that Jesus Christ purchased the benefits of a relationship for us on the cross? And people not take him up on that? It's already been purchased. It'd be a shame not to claim it.
You've been listening to the Gary Talks About God podcast. Are you looking for a church? Well, Red Bank Missionary Baptist Church is a community of believers who exist to glorify God and see transformed lives through the gospel of Jesus Christ. You can find us on the web at www.redbankmbc.com. Also, come visit us on Sunday at 8104 Red Bank Road in Germantown, North Carolina. Did you like this podcast? We put one out each and every week, so don't forget to subscribe. We hope this has been a blessing to you, and we thank you for listening.